Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion, John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody. This is Professor Gary Lee with the AMAA Masters Radio Blog Show. Welcome to our show on a Tuesday night. Need to kill that background, whoever's got something on. I can hear the background noise. Thank you so much.
I'm going to turn it off.
Appreciate it so much. I've got a special show tonight. It's a kind of a ladies' show, and we bring on a special guest. But before we do, I've got some announcements to make. And there are different things that we'd like to talk about. I hear a background noise back there. Is there someone that can turn that down, please? Thank you. One of the things I'd like to say to the city of Sugarland, Texas, and that's been the home of the Sport Karate Museum for almost 20 years now, thank you so much for the Sugarland, Texas Business Award. We work really hard every day to make our business a very strong business, and I appreciate that the city of Sugarland, Texas, recognizes that. I want to say thank you to the directors who gave that award to us just a couple of weeks ago. You know, I've got a shout-out to a couple of people before we do our show tonight, and the first shout-out is to my co-partner on the radio network. Her name is Karen Eden Herman. You all know her. She's one probably the most popular talk show host that we have in the radio business. The Eden experiment is pretty cool because she touches a lot of things on the visionary of what a martial arts lady is and a master. I had the pleasure of having her as my guest host this year, of being at the Women's Symposium, and we also recognized her for her work she's done. But just shout outs to her person because for the past couple of weeks we've shared, and I really respect her lineage, her history, her love for being an American native, her love for being just a martial artist, and the attitude that she has within the martial arts, and to help the community like she does with the kids programs that she works out with. So this shout-out is not something that she even expected. In fact, I don't even know if she's going to listen to this or not tonight. But I just want to say thank you, Karen, for being who you are and listening to me talk and ramble on like I do. God bless you. Now, I have one more big shout-out, and this is to Mary Powell Baca and John Powell and David Powell. And these three people you may not know, but they were the part of the Texas karate lineage of the early days in the 60s, and they were a sister and brother team. But they were under a great, great fighter named Ed Daniel. Now, Ed Daniel was under Mr. Alan Steen, and they traveled all around the country in the 60s and 70s, and Mr. Daniel was known as a top 10 fighter back in the Blood and Guts days. But this particular story is really cool because in the 70s, early 70s, there was two fights that happened in Dallas, Texas. One was the Jim Harrison fight against Victor Moore, which is really, really controversial and unique. And the other fight was between Ed Daniel and Joe Lewis, rest in peace. Well, the story is that Joe hit him so hard, he had to go through the hospital and, you know, and had a concussion. Well, that's not the story. The story is that he did have a concussion, but he didn't have to go to the hospital right afterwards. He fought Mr. Lewis. Mr. Lewis and them had a really war, but about two or three days after the fight, Mr. Daniel had a headache, and he then went to the hospital and because of the blow. But the story is this. Saturday night at the Living Legends, Ed Daniel presented me his black belt that he wore that night at that Joe Lewis fight. It was very, very emotional. And today I put it in the shadow box with the same belt that Junior E gave Mr. Steen, Mr. Steen gave Mr. Stone, Mr. Stone gave Mr. Burleson, Mr. Burleson gave Mr. Harrison, and Mr. Harrison gave it to me. And those belts in the shadow box represent the heart of what we do here, not only on the radio show, but the Sport Karate Museum. I appreciate you letting me allow to make those shout-outs to Mr. Ed Daniel, Mary Powell Baca, John Powell, and David Powell, and, of course, my dear friend Karen Eden Herdman. Now, on with the show tonight, we have a very special guest, and she's a fighter from the, well, from the 80s and 90s. We always talk about the women who set the pioneership, but when you think about it, guys, you know, the women that fought in the 80s and 90s, they're sort of the pioneers of the new generation of point karate fighting. And we have one of those great champions on the show tonight. Her name is Kristen Peaches Casabel, and she's from the area of the United States, which is known to produce some incredible fighters. So at this time, I'm very happy, and I'm gonna call her Peaches because she really made it clear to me that's her name. So with all the love and respect, I'd like to bring Peaches on the air right now. Peaches, are you there?
I'm right here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I forgot to say that you're our new on the board of our advisory committee for the AMMAA Masters Pioneers book, I understand. And congratulations on that. That's it's quite an alumni that Honchi Bowen has put together. And to add you to the list, I'm very honored to share that that list with you. God bless you. How do you feel about that? That's pretty cool, isn't it?
I'm just overwhelmed with everything this year that has happened to me, and especially meeting someone like yourself and Grandmaster Bowen. It's just been overwhelming and delightful, and I'm just very happy right now.
Well, you certainly deserve the recognition, and I'm really excited about the radio show. We're going on 3 years now to be able to bring to the public and educate people how martial arts started in America. Now, as I said in the beginning, I always talk about the women from the 60s and the 70s because that was the era that I came from. But you started fighting in what year? And I want to ask, let's go back even further. Let's talk about when you first became a black belt. What year was that, and who was you directly under? I know you were under an old friend of mine, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. But tell me how you started and where did you make black belt at?
Okay, I started in around 1985. I was started a little late. A lot of people start when they're younger, 7, 8, sometimes 4 and 5 years old. I started a little later on in my life. I was 22 years old from Boston, Massachusetts. Grew up in Dorchester, Massachusetts. I met Grandmaster Billy Blanks. It was a hard day. One day it was blizzard outside, and he gave a grand opening in Quincy, Massachusetts. And I asked my sister one day to take me out there. So we got together with her children,
that?
My niece and nephew.
I
started in 85, okay. 1985.
Okay.
And like I said, it was just a horrible day. That day that he was given the grand opening, and I was just so determined to get out there to Quincy, which was maybe about, I'd say maybe 45 minutes on the train. But I called my sister up, and she got all the kids together, and we got into our little 1985 Pinto, and we went through the storm, and we got out there for the grand opening. And once I met Grandmaster Billy Blanks and saw the demonstration that he gave, I was hooked after that.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, did you actually make black belt under Mr. Blanks?
Yes, I did. I studied under Grandmaster Blanks for 7 years. Seven years I studied
cool.
under Grandmaster Blanks. Yes.
Now, for people who don't know Mr. Blanks, yes, Billy Blanks is not only was a great fighter, rated in the top 10, rated number one at one time, but also was the inventor of the phenomenal Taibo. When you mentioned Taibo, you mentioned Billy Blanks, and when you mentioned Billy Blanks, you mentioned Taibo. Now, were you with him when he was coming up with that idea? Or do you realize that he was doing that? I'm just curious.
Oh, absolutely. The day that he
cool.
Created that, I started doing private classes because I was competing at that time. So I wanted to get, privates and just pinpoint my strategies and my weaknesses. So I started privates. And one day he asked me to stay late at the end of the class, let's say about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock p.m. So I stayed that day, and he said he wanted to try something out. And I said, no problem. I'd love to do that. So he called up a couple of people from the hair. There was a place called Hair Place One downstairs on the first floor, beauticians, and he asked a couple of aerobics instructors to join the class. And he wanted to try this technique out on us, what he was trying out, which was Taibo at the time. We didn't know. So we stayed at the class, and we turned on some music and had us do the punches, kicks with the music, and get on the ground and do kicks and things like that. And that's when it originated. So, yes, I was definitely there when he started the Taibo Nation.
That is so cool, Peaches. Peaches,
yeah.
That is so cool to share that history, because, you know, Taibo is only worldwide. It changed everything. And, you know, I gotta add a plug in for Billy. You know, I call him Billy, and that's out of deep respect. But Billy came up to me at the Super Show this year. And after all these years, because people don't realize, you only become a history general if I ask you personally. You know, it's not really done by, you know, whatever. So when I asked him to become a history general this year, of course, I mentioned you, and I contacted you through Rocky. And, you know, what was really cool is that we shared very deep, deep thoughts. And he remembers, this is a true story now, he remembers knocking me out at the Fort Worth Pro-Am in 1984 with that cartwheel kick. Now, what's really funny, Peaches, is that I trained like a maniac against that cartwheel kick, and I even had a bet on the side that Billy Blanks was not going to knock me out. That's a true story. And I think I beat a guy named Steve Perry that day. He was a great fighter from the Chicago area, whatever. And then Billy was next. And he did a couple moves, a parry, a clash. I said, this is cool. It came out of nowhere. And I had to be waking up with smelling salts. Yeah, yeah. So
I don't mean
and
to
what
laugh,
was funny, though, of all the people he fought and all the incredible journey that he had, he remembered that. He remembered that. That was cool. So, you know, people don't understand that old fighters like Mr. Blanks and myself, we don't forget things. And now I got to ask you a question. Being under Mr. Blanks is really cool, but you also trained with some other people. And when did you start your tournament career? Was it immediately after black belt, or what happened there? Tell me about that.
No, I started my tournament career when I was a yellow belt. Actually, my first tournament was Taekwondo as a yellow belt, and Grandmaster Billy Blanks, Saroj Benjamin, and Sean Graham, who I trained with, who were his top black belts at the time, all of us went to this Taekwondo tournament, and I competed and took first place there. But it was a struggle.
Do you remember your first black belt tournament, though? Do you remember your first black belt tournament?
Well, my first black belt tournament, I know a lot of people that I grew up with through the tournament circuit. I wasn't originally a black belt at the time. I was a blue belt. My first black belt event was with the Atlantic team. I traveled all over the country watching before I did compete because I wanted to know what I was up against. So when I competed with the Atlantic team against Cheryl Nance, Linda Dunley, Shavella Aaron, those young ladies at that time, I was only a blue belt. Once I competed, I got protested against because they found out that I was not a blue belt. I wasn't a black belt at the time. So that's when I became a black belt maybe like 2 years later after that event.
Okay, who promoted you to black? I know you were black.
Master,
why were you
Master
wearing a
Billy
blue belt
Blanks.
If you were a black belt under Billy? I'm confused.
Well, Master Blanks felt that at the time, I mean, I wasn't an instructor and I'm not a master at that time. That's something that you would probably have to ask him, but he felt that as a blue belt that I was ready to go into black belt division, but at the time, as far as testing, I was not ready to become a black belt as far as testing. But, yes,
so
I started competing as a
blue belt. So Mr. Blanks put you into the black belt division as a blue belt. Bottom line.
And I had to wear the blue belt, my blue belt, when I competed. I mean, most people would just wear the black belt in the event of tournaments, but he made me wear the blue belt.
Listen to me. I don't mean to interrupt. I've got to ask questions.
Oh, no.
So how many people did you fight as a blue belt in a black belt event before you started getting protested against?
Oh, my goodness. There was a lot. The main women that I did compete against was lightweight, middleweight, and heavyweight, and I can give you the names, like Cheryl Nance, who's from North Carolina. I competed against Linda Dunham.
I know Cheryl. Did you beat her? Did you beat her?
I never beat Cheryl Nance. She's awesome. Okay. Never beat her.
I fought her maybe about
four times. Linda Dunley, I fought plenty of times. I've only beat her twice when it counted. But, yeah, I got my butt kicked pretty badly from Linda Dunley.
Did you ever fight Arlene?
No, Arlene Nemus, she retired by the time I got up to black belt.
Okay.
I fought Linda Dunley and Chavella Aaron almost every weekend.
Now, let me ask you, did you fight the big tournaments that you fought, did you fight NBL and NASCA?
Yes, I did. NBL, PKL, NASCA, Crane, I fought them all.
That's cool. Now, did you ever fight in the battle or
I fought in the
Diamond
Battle
Nationals?
Of Atlanta. I won. Yes, I fought in the Diamond Nationals. I fought in Battle of Atlanta. I won Battle of Atlanta. I never won Diamond Nationals. I took second in the Diamond
Nationals.
Oh, you won
the battle. Cool. What year was that?
I won the Battle of Atlanta. I won the U.S. Capitol Classics, U.S. Open, Ocean State.
What year was that?
National.
What year did you win the battle? Peaches. What year did you win the battle?
I think that was in 1998.
Now, let me ask you a question.
The
type of fighting that you did, and obviously it wasn't the rip and tear and bare knuckle type things. Was you aggressive? Or can you tell me about your fighting style a little bit?
Yes, well, my style was versatile. Someone told me that. This gentleman from England called me one day when I won the Twin Towers tournament. He came up to me and said that, Peaches, you know, you are versatile. And I didn't understand what that meant at the time. But I had a lot of techniques. But my favorite technique was the blitz, back fist reverse punch, a lot of faking, footwork.
You know who
I learned that from
blitz?
Joe Louis. Yes,
you know,
Grandmaster
Joe,
Billy Blank.
Pretty much, yeah.
Cool. Yes, Joe Louis, when he came up to our school one day, this is when I was like an orange belt, he came up to our school and he was teaching us how to work the clock, and I didn't understand that at the time. And he did a lot of fakes and footwork. So when he started doing that, it was working the ring instead. A lot of people just stand there and they go across the line and they don't have any defense and offense. They always just go forward. Well, Joe Louis at the time was teaching us, don't just go across the line, work the ring. And that's how I learned how to work the ring and then perfect my blitz from Grandmaster Billy Blanks and also Joe Louis. Yes, that is correct.
Well, you realize that one of my special guests on my weekly show, who's my student now, he actually was one of the originally Joe Louis's black belts, and that's Dean Piles. You got to meet him this year. Did you realize that?
Was he one of the ones that was there when the...
He looks like Wolverine. He's Wolverine. He did the sword and the bow.
Yes, I remember him.
You'll
very
be hearing
well.
Him in a few minutes. We go at each other pretty
awesome.
Hard in our segment. So, yeah, you know, it's a small world. It's a small world. But let me ask you one more question.
Yes, it is.
How would you feel... I mean, okay, this is kind of a dumb question. You probably think I'm dumb for asking it, but I'm going to ask you.
Not
fighting
at all.
fighting the women from the 70s, that era, the early 70s, those women that were coming up, and compared to the fighting style that you were, is there a comparison, or do you believe that they could hang with you, or you could hang with them? I mean, Have you studied those people at all? I mean, you got to meet a lot of them this year at my event.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But I was just,
absolutely.
So you would like the bare knuckle. You like the bare fist type stuff, huh?
Well, we didn't, the equipment that we had, I mean, when I first started, there was no headgear rule.
Right.
Then once someone had got injured and there was a death at one of the tournaments, that's when they started to allow mouthpieces, headgear, and all the shin pads and all of that. So
right.
I grew up where it was either bare knuckle in Taekwondo or, you know, you had an option if you wanted to do full contact or light semi-contact. So I was old school. That's how I was brought up. So there was really...
You feel comfortable fighting a Malia Dukakis or a Joy Turbeville or those women from the 70s that were blood and guts, rip and tore, throw you down and stomp you?
Yes, that's how we trained at Grandmaster Blank School. We did takedowns, I mean, because every tournament and every competition was different. We would train for each event. So some you
what's
could
the hardest
get the back,
you ever been
some
hit?
With throwing technique.
Peaches, what's the hardest you ever been
yes,
hit?
Yes, sir.
What's the hardest you ever been hit? Yeah.
The hardest I've ever been hit was from Linda Dunley.
Amen.
Straight in the mouth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Remember what
she taught me
what
very
tournament?
Well. Oh, absolutely. That was Doreen Colleandro's tournament in Revere,
okay.
Massachusetts. I'll never forget it.
Can I tell you a story real quick?
Several times. Sure.
May I tell you a story, please?
I'm ready to hear this. Yes, please.
I always ask permission, Peaches. That's why, you know. Yeah, Miss Denley and I have been friends for many years, and I had the first fight club in Houston back in 1979 and 80. And Miss Denley, she used to drive one way, 40 miles, and be the only woman that would show up. And I'd have a fight club where everyone would pay $1, and they'd walk in, and they'd put their names in a hat. Now, I not only had some of the best karate guys show up, but I had street fighters. I had wannabe gangsters, I guess. It wasn't before gangsters, but you know, some bad people, cowboys, whatever. And they would show up, put the dollar in, and we'd use them to get ready for tournaments. That was our attitude, the point karate guys, and we fought differently back then. But nonetheless, Miss Denley would be the only one that would show up. One night, this cowboy redneck showed up and said he was a 7th-degree black belt in Taekwondo. And he drew Miss Denley's name. And he was very insulted. He didn't want to fight a woman. He didn't want to fight a girl, as he called her. And he wasn't going to shake her hand. He wasn't even going to get in the ring with her. Of course, Ernie Radar Smith, rest in peace, and myself, we persuaded him that she wasn't really that tough. She was here because, you know, she thought she could fight. I mean, we were lying our butts off to this guy. And but finally, he wouldn't even shake her hand. And because of the disrespect, I saw a woman for the first time in my life beat up a 6'3" man, literally. We normally fought for 3 minutes, extra minute for training. But Ernie wouldn't let me stop because Miss Denley kept winking at Ernie. Ernie kept winking at me. And I think that I let him fight for about 5 minutes because I was running the center. Now, when they stopped, this guy had a black eye. His nose was bleeding and his ear was bleeding. And I know that his ribs were hurt from all the sidekicks. But she just beat this guy bad because he disrespected her. I made him bow out afterwards. This is the funny part. I made him bow out afterwards. I made him at least touch her hand because I made him wear boxing gloves. He didn't put on feet. This Denley taped up and, you know, wore those little safety punches, right? And she beat the crap out of me. Now, here's the best part. I realized that afterwards, after he got beat up, that I never let him sign a waiver. So before he left, I stopped him and said, "Sir, you need to sign this waiver, please, before you leave." Of course, I never saw him again. And that was really when I inducted her into the Texas Martial Hall of Fame a few years back. That was a story I told dignitaries and legends. And, you know, I'm the only black belt, Peaches, that's on her wall in her dojo that's not her black belt. And I treasure that.
Wow.
I, I, So you mentioned Linda Denley. I have to tell that story. Now, one more thing. Yeah. You travel with the Atlantic. Now, you traveled. We're going to talk about Rocky when we come back. But you traveled all around the world too. You didn't just fight in the United States.
No, sir. I fought all over the world.
Okay.
I fought in several countries outside of the United States.
Okay. What are some of the countries that you fought in?
I fought in Gdansk, Poland. I fought in London, England, in Chioli, Italy, Canada.
Now, how do you feel those fighters fought compared to American fighters of the 80s?
At the time, I didn't understand how much they study our techniques. Once I went over outside the country, especially to Gdansk, Poland, they already know who you are, your weight, your style, your techniques. They are just almost obsessed with how to beat you. So I kind of got that in my head once I left. My first international tournament was WACO, and that was in London, England. And I took third.
Fight,
I took a bronze medal.
Have you ever fought Christine Bannon Rodriguez?
Yes, I have. I fought Christine several times. We had some great battles, actually. And one thing I do have to say is that we are best of friends. So,
yeah, she's a super lady.
Yeah, she's what I would call
I know she's a Waco champion. Now, you didn't fight the same division that she did. I know she won a WACO title.
Yes. No, we fought. We never met in the WACO tournaments. I was either heavyweight or middleweight.
Okay.
She was super lightweight. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and play the Legends Name Game. I'm going to hit you with some names, and we can talk about them. And some of the people I'm going to mention, we have relationships together. But I'm anxious to talk to you about some of the people. So stay online, and I'll be back with you in just a few minutes. Okay, Peaches?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. I'm with Peaches Costable, one of the great fighters from the 80s, and talking about her career and her journey in the martial arts. We got to honor her this year at the Living Legends. But she's also part of the vision of Hanti Bowen, and together with us, Stephen Hayes, who most of you might know as being an authentic jiu-jitsu expert, they're the newest members on the AMAA Masters Advisory Board, and they're going to be doing promotions on the Masters and Pioneers book, and this is available now on Amazon. And they've also, Hanti Bowen has opened up nominations for the 2019 book, which is going to be the Who's Who Directory. You know, they're excited because next week, I'm giving you a little rumor here, they're going to be unveiling their new MAA, Masters Who's Who Online Business Directory. And if you have any questions or you need to order personally or just ask questions, you can call directly Hanti Bowen at 919-618-8075, and we appreciate that. And we appreciate all the work that Hanti Bowen does, not only for the radio network, but also the Who's Who Directory and the work that he does in bringing people together. This is very important. Well, you know, one of my favorite segments in the whole world is this next one that we created a few months ago. And it deals with my student and one of the top competitors in America. His name is Dean Piles, but he's known as the Wolverine on the Parts Unknown show. So I'd like to bring on Wolverine. Wolverine, are you there? Wolverine.
Yes, sir.
Goodness gracious.
Yes,
are you
sir.
Teaching class?
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Well, listen,
yes, sir. I will.
Well, put down your shin eye and don't hit nobody in the head for about a few minutes. I want to talk to you about something. This week, I want to talk about something that's really, it's interesting. I'm going to get kind of vibrant on this one because a lot of people don't know the history. They just take it for granted what a point is. And so this week we're going to ask and talk about what constitutes a point. What people don't really understand is that karate basically started as far as self-defense. So in execution of Ippon, which is one-point method to Meshi to stop an opponent, but also to control that technique because it was so powerful that you would knock someone out if you didn't control it. Well, if I remember right, one of the first tournaments that was invented after a tournament was best known by the Jim Harrison's tribute in a little television studio where everybody that was there was fighting for $1. $1. It was Skipper Mullins, Fred Wren, David Moon, J. Pat Burleson, Joe Louis, of course. The reason why Mike Stone and Chuck Norris were there because one was sick and one had another commitment. But they had some incredible fighters there, and they were fighting for $1 to get a point across. Now, this is the bottom line. If they scored 1 point on each other, it was 1 point. But if they scored another point, which is the second point, they lost. It was over with. And that's basically how it started. Then someone decided, well, we need to put a time limit on it. So let's put not 1 minute, let's let them fight for 2 minutes, and let's make it the first 3 points. Where 1 point institutes the combination of a combination technique or a kick or punch or just one hit punch. So now they went to 3 points. 3 points, 2 minutes, and they did it for years. Well, what happened was in the 80s, the fighters changed so much, and they became really, really, well, proficient. And basically they started something really, really something they wanted to call a union. Well, this wasn't going to happen. Karate Illustrated Magazine, Black Belt Magazine at the time, were the most powerful people that governed the ratings, and they just weren't going to allow that. So Mr. Roy Curbin stepped in. He had one of the largest karate tournaments in the country. It was the Fort Worth Pro-Am, and he instituted the two-point kick. That means if you kick somebody to the part of the body and the judges saw it, 3 out of 4 judges or 3 out of 5 judges saw it, it would constitute 2 points. Now, it was light face contact, of course. But the problem was it was instituted in Texas. And the fighters from all across the country loved to do high kicks. What they didn't realize was if you lift that leg, people from Texas were going to kick you in the groin. And that was 2 points. So the guys lifting their legs a little bit cautiously now. But now they instituted the two-point kick. That means now it wasn't just to three. It was now to five. You go to five now. Two-point kick, one-point punch. Of course, they had the fouls and this type of thing. But that changed things. 5 points, okay? And then what happened was someone came along and created an event called the NBL, the National Black Belt League. And this was fine and dandy, except the inventor instituted a three-point technique. And it made it so hard and so complicated that it was argued almost every time they had the event because people didn't really understand it. Eventually, over a few years, they understood it. And to make people happy, 1 year they could keep the groin, 1 year they couldn't. Well, you know, the groin is a very touchy subject. Literally, what sport in the world gives you points for kicking a private area? Karate, and particularly Texas. So we've got a problem here. But nonetheless, that's where the 1 point, 2 point, and 3 points, and the total points came involved. Wolverine, my question to you is, because I know that you're a fighter. You've been doing kata for a long time. You haven't fought for a while, but I know you're a fighter. How do you feel about, for instance, the points that are given now, for instance, like a front jab to the body? Would that stop anybody? Or how about the fake backhand and they get a point for it where they don't even make any contact whatsoever? I can go on. Wolverine, give me your opinion.
Well, this is the thing, and this is where my players always get in trouble. Okay, judges will say, okay, don't kick the head, but if you make a kick towards the head and it's close enough to have hit the head, then we're going to call a point. Then my fighter kicks over the head or swishes right by the face, they don't call a point. So then I say, hit them. Then they hit them, then they're going, you're hitting them too hard. You're kicking them in the head too hard. But the rules are a kick has to stop the puncher. So if a puncher's coming in, the kick has to stop the puncher from advancing. Now, the puncher nowadays used to, people would land good right cross, good uppercuts, ridge hand, you know, solid back fist. But now it's like a 1-2 touch. It's a real light, you know, and it's the same combination over and over. They call it their version of the blitz. It's step forward, lead hand goes up, backhand goes to body.
Hey, look, Wolverine, that's not a blitz. doing a backhand strike and reverse punch.
That's what it is now.
That's not a blitz.
Well, that's what they call a blitz. That's what I'm saying. That's because you have a lot of mandy-pandies, you know, so everybody's doing that. So, like at your tournament, when we had the rule that you don't break on break, you break when the center judge pulls you apart, you get inside, and you hit as many times as you can before he pulls you apart. Now, my fighter took full advantage of that, and everybody thought we were being buttholes because we were hitting late. But that's
well,
because
don't want,
they didn't understand.
I don't want to talk about. I don't want to talk about that fight. Honestly, what
no,
I wanted
I'm
to talk
about
in general.
I'm just talking about that kind of rule in general. So you have to, if these guys that are judging, if you're going to call a point, then the judges have to know what constitutes that point. If it's going to be no contact to the head with kicks, just get within an inch or 3 inches, then they need to call that. If they're not going to call it, then let them hit the head. If you're going to play a sport where you're getting kicked and punched at, why are you going to pitch a fit if you get kicked or punched? I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, that's what you're there to do, is kick and punch each
other.
Okay,
I got a question.
So,
Wolverine, I got a question. Do you remember, and you got to go back a little bit because I know you're young, but still, I bet you remember, and I can tell you who invented it. Do you remember back in the day when someone hit somebody and they raised their hand to constitute that they scored?
Yeah,
you remember that?
Now,
that's one of the first pet peeves I've got, because what happens is that when that guy hits you and you think that you're raising your hand to tell the judge you scored, a predator like you or
I'm going to beat
you,
him down.
I'm not talking about other fighters.
I'm going to hit him.
I'm going to take advantage of him raising his hand. And that's where people ought to say, well, you hit after the break. Well, that's bull crap. Excuse my language. That's not hitting after the break.
That's
still a fight.
It's not a break.
And just because he calls his own point, just because he raises his hand or she raises his hand to call their own point, why would you stop fighting? How do you feel about that?
Well, I feel like that's a bunch of BS is what I feel like. I mean, that's the whole thing. And what you have is, you got fighters now that think they should do the fighting and do the judging. So they want to fight and call their points so they know what the points is. Not only do they constitute the point, they want to tell the people that are keeping score, hey, no, my score is this, their score is that, and not getting, because they're getting too brazen. They got to get center judges that can put them in their place, run that ring and say, hey, look, I'm not asking you who scored. I'll tell you who scored. And they let these big teams get around the side, and they start yelling and calling points. And the poor judges, they're overwhelmed. They're not even calling points anymore. They're just doing what they're told at this point.
Wolverine, that's just setting up a false
sense of security.
Wolverine, settle down. Woosah. Okay. Listen to me. If I say two names to you, I want you to tell me what you think immediately. Kevin Thompson, Steve Fisher, James Cook. You probably don't even know James Cook, I bet. You do know James?
No.
Okay,
I,
cool. What do you think
I,
about?
A
what do you
bit.
Think about those? What I say those three names. What do you think? I'm just asking. I'm putting you on the spot. If you don't know anything, that's okay. But I'm gonna tell you the reason why I say those three names. Anything come
to
mind?
Go ahead and tell me the reason why you said. Yeah, go ahead. You tell me
well,
the reason why
all,
you said the three.
First of all, Kevin Thompson, you know, he's dealing with the Louis Gehrig disease, and I've sent all my love to him. And I saw him in his prime when he was a little KA. And he was the first people, one of the first people on the East
Coast.
He's
still got a super good
attitude. Let me finish, please, before you interrupt. He was one of the first people on the East Coast to win weapons, kata, and fighting consistently in every tournament. Steve Fisher from California under Mike Stone consistently won weapons, kata, and fighting in all his tournaments. And James Cook, who I've competed against since the early 70s, won consistently fighting, kata, and weapons. So my point is, when they created these points and various things, when they wanted to say the best competitor of the tournament was the grand champion, those three guys were instrumental for that. And because they had the most points, garnered together. Well, then they threw away the points, and they're just saying, if you win all three divisions, you are the grand champion. Now, here's my pet peeve. In today's major tournaments around the country, and God bless them, God bless everybody who does karate tournaments, but they have now 16 to 30 different grand champions at that one event because they've broken up all these different divisions. So, therefore, you don't really know who the best competitor of the tournament. When Kevin Thompson won the three events, he knew he was the best at the tournament. When Steve Fisher won, he was the really best at that tournament. Now, I know there were fighters, there were kata people, and there were weapons people, but to be unique, to win all three consistently in major tournaments, I want the people to understand this tonight. I don't want to be confusing. Point karate started with the attitude of trying to be the best you could to demonstrate you could do self-defense in a situation with someone attacking you. And now it's turned into a game. It's turned into a game of tag.
Well, the problem was it was before everybody, you know, before, you know, they come out with the pads, you know, everybody was bare-knuckling and hitting, and you would have a lot of people show up, and then attendance started dropping off. So they come out with the pads and then the moderate contact. And you're right, exactly. It was karate was supposed to be to show that you could defend yourself in the street. Now point fighting is a completely separate thing. It's not like consider that. Although, if you fight somebody with a point fighter's mentality of movement, speed, and creating angles, and you add power, then you have a good fighting system. But most people can't do that. There's very few that can do that. Raymond Daniels can do that. You know, Jason Bowerly Tankson can do that. Regina's a good person.
So a point fighter is either a tag point fighter or a dangerous point fighter. And you mentioned Raymond. Raymond is a dangerous point fighter.
Right.
Again, I've watched him grow up. He could tag you, play with you, have fun with you, or knock you out.
Right.
So, and there are not many dangerous point fighters. They think they are, but not many. Let me end this segment with this. I taught you, and Mr. Lewis taught you, that physically, when you fight because it's a game, you do control. You do control because it's a game and you have to conform to the rules. But mentally, he didn't get up. I'm not talking about knockout. I'm talking about he didn't get up. And whatever it takes for him not to get up. So mentally, you're not that you're a winner as a point, but you knew that your karate was real. That is gone today, I believe, only because it's turned into a game. I thank you for this time, Wolverine. We screamed a little bit at each other. I like that. I miss screaming at you. but, you know.
I don't mind it. The first time, I'll tell you a funny story real quick. When I first started fighting, I hit this dude, and I knew I'd knocked him out. So I hit him, and I did knock him out. So I turned to walk away. Grandmaster Lewis, man, he flogged me. He was slapping me in the back of the head. He told me from that point on, I don't ever want to see you hit somebody and turn and walk away. You stay on them until that ref peels you off. And from that day forward, that's the way I done it. That's why they call me the Wolverine. Because everybody thought I'm just overkill.
Thank God you're
but
the
it was better than getting
ugly,
Joe Lewis's
and
big
hand
smacking
like
you in the back of the head. I can tell you that.
Listen, you didn't hear me. I thought they called you the Wolverine because you're ugly and you have a mustache like Wolverine.
I'm ugly, I'm ugly's part of it, but ugly and aggressive, that's the two parts.
Well, you know
what?
I got a good feeling. It's 2019, and just a rumor. I would love to start a rumor that you're going to make everybody wonders if you can fight or not. Maybe you could fight in the three-man tag team black belt next year.
Stranger things have happened, you know, and
team? Listen, Jason Holmes, Christopher Robinson and Dean Piles. The AOK would have to come up with something out of their woodwork to beat those three guys. Anyway, I'm just starting a rumor. I don't mean to say you're going to fight or anything.
Yeah.
But
don't get
kind of cool.
Worked up. I mean, you know, things happen.
Well,
you know.
Well,
it was rumored
that
I was going to compete in COD Wars at one time.
Well, you're going to win it next year. Okay? Come on. Three's
a hoot.
You got to do it. That's another story. We'll talk about that on another show. But listen,
you can't ever look at yourself as a loser.
I know that.
So, you know.
Listen,
you know.
I'll talk to you in a few days, and I look forward to next week, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, Dean.
Love you.
Enjoy
the
talk to tonight.
The show. You too, and Peaches, you're doing awesome.
So are you.
And I will.
Thank you.
I will keep blessing.
Peaches,
y'all later.
By the way, listen. Peaches just bragged about Mr. Lewis for about 5 minutes, and I just want to make sure that you guys communicate because, you know, Mr. Piles was raised by Mr. Lewis, Peaches, and you guys need to share some stories. So, you know. Wolverine, you know what this proves?
Yes, sir.
You know what this proves, Wolverine? This proves that I am the best middleman in America. I just put you two guys together again. Okay?
Exactly.
Amen.
Awesome.
All right, Wolverine. I'll talk to you soon, okay? Us.
All right. Y'all tied up. Us.
God bless you. You know, I really enjoy my segment with the Wolverine because, you know, sometimes we clash on some of our opinions, but I think the magic of having him on my show is that we talk about subjects that nobody would ever talk about. And because it's kind of a hush-hush on some of these subjects. For more subjects that you don't want to, that you don't mind listening to, but you know that people need to talk about, you can go to Facebook and type in Ramblin' Cousin Eddie, an opinion of a martial art fan. And there's lots of subjects on that Facebook page that talks about some things that that's interesting. The other thing that I'd like to talk about is that we're working on an actual video game for the Sport Karate Museum. We're going to have a teaser here pretty soon where you can actually go on the internet as a student, as an instructor, as a master, or a grandmaster and ask a question on those levels. And a nice man will come out, and I'm going to surprise you with that man when we get this done. And he'll come out, and I'll do his voice. He'll say, okay, what is the question? And, of course, you'll ask the question, and the question will be answered on the level that you ask it. And it will introduce the idea of the Sport Karate Museum History General's video game. So more on that in the upcoming weeks, and we'll be really making some big splashes around Christmas time on this idea. Well, I'd like to bring back my special guest, Peaches. And we're going to play the Legends Name Game. Peaches, are you there?
I'm right here.
Super. Now, the Legends Name Game is something I invented with Bob White, one of the great Kempo guys. He was actually my first interview 3 years ago. And Mr. White, we pre-interviewed, and he said, Gary, it'd be really cool if you just throw a name at me and we do it like a fight. I talk about that person for 2 minutes, and we go on to the next person. And so every segment now for 3 years, we do the Legends Name Game. So I'm going to throw some names at you, Peaches, and you got two minutes or less to tell me about that person and how that person influenced you, or if you even know that person or even heard that person. Maybe because some of the stuff you don't know that some of these names I'm going to hit you with, some of the names you are familiar with. So I'm going to start off with the first one we talked about earlier, and I want to emphasize the fact that he was your first instructor. Talk about Billy Blanks.
Grandmaster Billy Blanks was awesome. The day I met him, I knew he was going to be a superstar, and I wanted to be a part of that. And the blessing is that he believed in me and gave me the strength to become who I am today. He was just an awesome instructor, awesome person, awesome human being, and I still thank him to this day for believing in me and taking me off the street because I don't know which path I would have taken if he didn't have faith in me and believe that I could become a champion, which that's what he told me at the time when we were training one day when it was just me and him. And I didn't understand that meaning of what he said at that time. We were just sparring. It was 90 degrees outside. He turned the heat up in the dojang and put on the pads, full gear, and we were sparring so intensely. And just stopped in the middle of us fighting this day and said, do you know that you can become a world champion? And I wasn't even thinking of that at that time. All I was thinking about is how to survive in the street and learn these techniques of someone that I never thought I could meet. You know, I used to go to kung fu movies and stay and go into the bathroom and hide and then go back out and watch kung fu movies all over again. And to see someone that would be able to do that full flesh and full person in front of me was just admirable. I just couldn't believe what I was experiencing at that time. So, yes, Grandmaster Billy Blank is someone that I would always admire till the day I die and be thankful and grateful for.
I hope that when I put this on your page that you send it to him so he say those kind words about him. Okay, let's go to the next person, Rocky DiRico, who, by the way, if it wasn't for Rocky, I wouldn't have met you. I've known of you.
That is correct.
I wouldn't have met you. And Rocky is one of my original history generals, and we work very close every year, of course, with the International Hall of Fame. So tell me about Rocky DiRico.
Rocky DiRico, we would travel NASCA, PKL, NBL, all the tournaments together. And we would always joke, such a great guy, always upbeat, great personality, smile. He would tell his corny jokes sometimes, all the time. And just such a happy person. And we traveled so much together at the time where a lot of people started to retire, and it was maybe just me and him. He was on the John Paul Mitchell team, and we would just travel together, and we would always make jokes of who's going to win the grand championship. I would win fighting, and he would win forms and weapons. So we traveled all over together, and one thing I can say about Mr. DiRico, he always had my back from day one. And that's why we met, myself and yourself, is because Rocky believed in me, and he just always, always was upbeat and uplifted me. And the great spirit that he has was just an honor to be with someone who was just so positive all the time. Such a great
man.
Well,
you know, he's not only just positive, he's a personal friend. And I'll tell you a little story. I explained it at the Legends this year. You know, when he called me about this, I belong to quite a few Hall of Fames and been inducted, but I told him, I said, well, you know, Rocky, I don't really endorse any particular Hall of Fame as a living legends because, you know, we're kind of we sit on the fence with everybody. And he said, well, Gary, this is very personal because I know the work you're doing, and I want Texas to be represented or people that the museum really, really respects. And when he said that to me, I said, okay, allow me to do 8 to 10 people a year, and you'll sponsor it, and we'll do it at the Legends. And that's how it started. So for the past 3 years, he's allowed me to put in Jim Buten, Chuck Norris, all these cool people. And I love Rocky DiRico, too. He's just an incredible individual who really cares about the martial arts and the lineage of it. Now, another person that I want to hit you with, and we lost her a couple of years ago, and I was very close to her, Nancy Cirio. Hear me up, Nancy.
I'm going to get a little emotional about Master Nancy Cirio. She was a tough cookie to crack. When I was competing, she didn't talk that much. She was very stern and very strict on the rules when I was fighting. And one day she came up to me. She was just such a cool person. And she asked me to come down to her school and teach her students fighting techniques. And that's when we became very close. We had a great bond. Not too many people are invited to her school, so that was just such an honor for me to be able to come down to her school. She would teach me forms and weapons, and I would teach her students fighting techniques. So, yes, she was just a beautiful, soft-hearted, strong-hearted, but, yes, once you get inside of her heart, it was a very soft spirit and humble. And I really did appreciate and honored every bit of coming down to her school and teaching for her to her students. Yes.
Now,
and
did
I missed
you
her very
know?
Much.
Did you know Young Sung Lee from Hot Mudo? Did you know him from Washington? He's the one that introduced me to Nancy. He's the one. What happened was I got picked up from the airport by a limousine, and who was in the back seat? Nancy Cereal. And the first thing she said to me was, I swear she did this. I guess she researched me. She says, I don't care how cute you are. I'm not laying down. You're not cutting bananas and cucumbers on my stomach. And I said, I don't know you. Who are you, ma'am? She says, my name is Nancy Cereal. And immediately I thought Nick Cereal, you know, because I knew Nick Cereal, but I didn't really know his wife. And so we shared a limousine together. We became fast friends. Of course, we sat on the board that day, and she saw me do my thing, and we kept in touch. And through her sickness, I kept in touch with her up until we lost her. And 2 years, she came to the Living Legends, and we got to honor her. Wow. And actually, Bill, her son, I tested him for his fifth-degree black belt and at the Living Legends. And she allowed me to do that. And I miss Nancy, too. And every year, we honor somebody in her name with the Nancy Cereal Dragon Image Fighting Award. So I appreciate you talking about Nancy, and I know from talking to you how close you were. She was a very, very, very special lady. And
yes, she was.
A true warrior. She could fight.
Yes.
She could fight.
Yes.
Yes, she could.
Yes.
And you know what she gave me?
She
the book that her and Nick wrote. The book that her and Nick wrote, and she signed it, and Nick had signed it, and she gave me that book. And like I said, I get very emotional too, Peaches, because what people don't understand,
yeah,
unless they talk to someone like you or they talk to one of the legends that I brought in, well, done this for 26 years, it's not about money. It's not about ego. It's not about awards. It's about remembering where we came from and who established it for us, like Nancy Cereo and Billy Blanks and Sid Campbell.
Yes.
You know, we can go on. So I appreciate that. And the other thing I want to say to you before I go to another name, and this is personal. It's my show, and I can be personal. I really loved your character and explaining to me fighting as a blue belt in a black belt division. That, to me, to say that publicly on my show took a lot of guts. But it shows your character as a champion. And I really admire that. I wasn't going to wait till after the show and tell you on the phone. I'd much rather tell you right now and tell you that that shows me true character of a champion. Because most people wouldn't tell me that or say it on the air live that you fought as a blue belt and beat black belts. To me, that's kind of cool. But I understand how some people would be upset because back then there was too many TMRs. You know what TMR is, Peaches?
No, I don't.
Too many rules. TMR, too many rules. So I really enjoyed that character. Let's go to one more name. I don't know if you, but you mentioned the Atlantic team, so I got to mention Chuck Merriman. Did you know Chuck?
Oh, I know Master Merriman very well, very well. A strong man.
Yes.
A strong man, great character, really loves the martial arts. And, you know, he was a tough cookie also. And,
yes, he was.
We always got along. That was my dream, was to try to be on the Atlantic team, which I knew, you know, by that time I did become a official black belt. You know, that team had already started to separate and go on to different, you know, John Paul Mitchell and their own schools and their own teams. But at that time, he was just, I just admired him so of how he had a, what would I call the team? It was just, the team was just unbeatable. And to give you a quick story on that. What had happened was when I went to New Jersey, the Atlanta, that's when I fought as a blue belt, and I had the black belt. At this time, I wore the black belt, and the story was told that I had not become an official black belt. I won the Atlantic tournament. I took third, and the person who takes third can go to Bermuda to fight at the world championship
international
in Bermuda.
Cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Well, that didn't happen. It was tough. I had a really tough situation there. But once it got out that I wasn't
that was the first
official
tournament,
black belt.
By the way, that was the first tournament that offered $5,000 for fighting in kata, I remember. Yeah.
In Bermuda. And
yeah,
that was the world championships at that time. That's where you go to become a world champion.
You cared about the world championship.
My dream.
Everybody was fighting for that $5,000, Peaches.
Yeah.
The heck with the world championship. They won that money.
Yeah.
$5,000 is a lot of money. I remember, if you remember you won grands. I mean, my first grand was in the early 80s, but I remember my attitude was, they normally would give away $50 to $100 for grand championship. They wouldn't give away first place for money in the fighting. But if you won grand, you could win $50 or $100. Well, back in the day, if you lived on macaroni and cheese, $50 was a lot of money. So, you know, $5,000 for first place, man, that was incredible. I remember that. Absolutely.
It brought
I got to ask you, you experienced the Living Legends this year, and it was number 26, and it was the power of women. And there's a lot of women that couldn't have came but wanted to come. But the women that did come were represented from the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, and the year 2000. And you experienced firsthand. You were there. Kind of tell my listeners what you experienced, and I hope to see you again next year for the Hawaiian adventure. But tell me what you experienced this year and some of the people you met.
Okay, so I experienced some beautiful women at this event, Mikey, and she was just – I met her before we came down to Texas, and she was just such a sweet lady. When you had mentioned to me over the phone about her, I didn't have a picture of who she was. So when I was at the Grandmaster Dennis Brown's event, she approached me, and she was looking for someone, and I was just sitting eating lunch, and she came up to me, and we just started talking, and then she introduced herself to me, and I said, OMG, you are who Professor Lee talked about. I can't believe that we met, and you are everything of what he explained of who you are, and she is just such an awesome person. But yes, I met so many other women and gentlemen at the event that I know we will be friends for a lifetime. And it
okay,
was just
well,
such a
here's
great
my
event.
Question, Peaches, is that you've gone to lots of events, you've been to lots of tournaments, and mine is not really a tournament. It's an experience. And I wanted to ask you, have you experienced anything like that before?
No, I have not, because, and I can say this, usually you go to a tournament and you can cut it with a knife in the atmosphere of everyone just wants to win. At this event that you held, everyone had smiles, happiness, just humbled, no ego, excitement, just glad to be there and represent who they are and wanted to know who you are. The majority of the time, they don't want to know who you are. They don't care who you are. They just want to win. This experience that I had coming to Houston at this event, overwhelming for me because the guards were down. Humbleness set it all to play. And it was just so good. No stress. Just having a really good time laughing and just mingling and talking and learning about each other and really learning about each other and listening. And that is what I experienced at the Museum of Sports Karate this year.
Wow.
And I'm not saying that. If I don't like an event, I will never go back, and I'll let you know personally. But that's what I learned at this event this year, is the humbleness. And just everyone was just so grateful and eager to hear your story. And that's what I loved about this event. No, thank you, because it was awesome. And I can't wait to be there for next year.
Well, thank you. And by the way, I just got a personal message from one of my dearest friends and one of my history generals. Her name is Charlotte Hoffman Emerson. And she told me to tell you how much she appreciates you. And she's listening to us right now. So you want to say something to her? Hi, Charlotte. Hey, how you doing?
I love you, and it was such an honor to meet you. And she's so awesome, and what a great personality.
Yeah, she was a little badass too. Excuse my language. I mean, she fought Marion Jimenez in Hawaii. Yeah, she was a tough Texas cookie, and she grew up around all those legends. She was in the Chuck Lovin, who, by the way, Bill Wallace and Chuck Norris, both in two separate interviews, told me their toughest fight was from a guy from Texas who lived in Las Vegas, and his name was Chuck Lovin. So if those two guys said their two toughest fights was Chuck Lovin, and Chuck Lovin is responsible for Charlotte, you know, Hoffman Emerson, it shows you how tough she was. So Charlotte, we're thinking about you, honey. Thank you for saying hello.
I have a couple of names the people that I met. Carrie White, Robin Shockney.
My daughter. That's my daughter. Yeah.
Yes. She's beautiful. She was selling the jewelry, and I didn't know she was your daughter until she told me that, you know, well, you came over and made a little joke, but yes. And she was just a sweetheart. Jerry Pennington worked with me on my stances.
Yes.
Charlotte, who we just talked about, Karen Eden, Kathy Scarello,
yes.
The Stanley family, who is selling me, I'm getting a German Shepherd from Texas coming up the end of this
month.
Oh,
you are?
So
yeah, he's ahead of my security.
Yes, I am.
He's taking care of me for the past 2 years. Yeah,
I'm buying a German Shepherd from them the end of this month. They're shipping my baby to me the end of this month. So
super.
I just want to thank you for letting me meet all of these wonderful, and I'm getting emotional, wonderful and beautiful people. And I love the martial arts because I wouldn't meet these type of people outside of that. And I'm just so humbled and honored to have met you and these people that I have met at such a beautiful event.
Well, I appreciate
so much,
Peaches. But I got to ask you a question that's important, because people who are listening, new people who are listening for the first time or some old timers, I want to ask you a question. How important it is that the Sport Karate Museum keeps doing what they're doing to put that in people's faces about the history of where the pioneers came from? And how important it is to do the event every year to educate people on what you did and what I did and what everybody else did to create Sport Karate in America? How important is that, Peaches?
It's very important, and the reason why I feel it's important to me is that was my whole mission in the martial arts, is to leave a good, just leave my name and who I represent and what I represent in the martial arts. You want to be heard, and you want to be remembered. And I didn't feel that was that important until I gave you something that meant the world to me, which was my hand pads that I won in Kyoto, Italy. I kept them in my bag for almost 20 years. And when you asked me to bring something that meant the world to me and give to the museum, I didn't realize how special that was until I put them up on your desk that had so many warriors of the martial arts, names, faces. All of those plaques, belts, that you had.
But you understand, that's a tiny part. I've got the building, and I've got three sheds. I mean, every year I give
amazing.
People a taste. But you know what, Peaches? Those gloves is based upon the same thing I've done from day one, and it's by a saying by Miyamoto Musashi, who was the greatest swordsman ever, who wrote the Book of Five Rings, and he quoted this quote. It doesn't matter if it's a piece of dirt, if it's a piece of paper, or a sword, as long as you know the heart and where the heart that it came from. So
yeah.
Those gloves mean as much to me as Ed Daniels' belt that he gave me Saturday night. It means as much to me as those hundreds of signed uniforms and those 200 signed black belts that I have received in 20 years. They're not one more important than the other. Every one comes together and forms that history. I know that it was personal to you, and I know your heart. So I want to say thank you for those gloves, and thank you for you answering that, because people who don't go to the archives or go through the inventory artifact lists on Facebook and just see the things we have, then they'll understand it's not about pictures on a wall or what people say on the social media. It's about the history that was created for America. And you know what's really cool? In 2020, we get to bring karate do to the Olympics and to the world in a different way, because they've never seen kata before. They've only seen taekwondo and the trembling shock and what taekwondo has done, and they've done a great job. But that decade is over. Now it's karate do, and also people are going to be mesmerized by kata. So the
yeah.
Sport Karate Museum is the heart of your history, my history, Joe Lewis's rest in peace history, everybody's history. And I appreciate
yes.
the support that people do. And mentioning that, we do have a GoFundMe site. You can go directly at www.sportkaratemuseumarchives.com, or you can go to sportkaratemuseum.org. And that's made for the older people who aren't really computer literate. It's not as colorful as the other one. But to contribute to the GoFundMe site, we appreciate it. But, you know, thank you for tonight, Peaches, and your time on the show. It's been very special talking about your history. Now I have a vision of how tough you were. I talked to Rocky about it, but he can't do nothing but brag about you. I can't get anything else about him bragging about you. That's it. So you must have made a big impression on
him. I do want to say one more thing before we end the call. I just want to give thanks to my instructor, who now I've known for almost 25 years, Grandmaster Lee Smith, who is who I'm training with right now, doing the Shaolin Kung Fu, which is one of the hardest styles I've ever done. And I just want to give thanks to him for believing in me. And I want to get my black belt. I'm a green belt right now with him, and I want to get my black belt. And I just want people to know that when you strive, have a goal, write down your notes. Your body is your temple, and think positive. Even no matter how hard and how tough life may be, you can reach the stars. Go to the universe. Reach for the stars, go to the universe, and believe in yourself. Because it's hard getting up and wanting to work out and doing kung fu, but I want that black belt. I want to complete that mission. And it's been a long time, so I just want to give thanks to you, thanks to Grandmaster Billy Blanks, and Grandmaster Sifu Lee Smith, Grandmaster Rocky DiRico,
thank you.
Grandmaster DiRico,
thank you.
And especially Grandmaster Don Rodriguez. I love him so much. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to be heard.
Well, you know, I'm very honored that you would say my name. Those four other individuals, I still think of myself as a Hawaii boy living in a little tiny hut in Hawaii. I still get overwhelmed too. And, you know, you and I, we do share something, and that's emotions. And never quit crying, never quit laughing, and never quit remembering. And it was an honor talking to you tonight, Peaches. And by the way, make sure that you try to learn what the hula is, because I'm going to teach you next year when you come to the Hawaiian roast, okay? Because you're made to do the hula, you know? Cool. Okay, well, thank you, Peaches. God bless you, and I'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Aloha. Thank you so much.
Aloha. Well, everybody, that was Peaches Costable, one of the great champions from the 80s and 90s. And what a great interview talking about the history of martial arts in America through the women's viewpoint. And you know what's really interesting is that we always talk about the women from the 60s and the 70s. And, you know, I'll be real honest with you. I'm still doing this. I'm just now at the bottom of the 80s as far as recognizing people. It's taken me 26 Living Legends Roast in 20 years to just get to the lower part of the 80s. So this was a kind of a milestone for me to interview her, a woman from the 80s and 90s. And there'll be many more, I hope, in the future that we'll be able to talk to. I do have some upcoming shows I want to mention. I've got the great Vicki Marl, that's right, from North Carolina, the first woman to test underneath the Sika board on the Southeastern Karate Association. And also I have her, they call her the little Vicki Marl, but she has her own legacy, and that's Lee Bernitas. And they'll both be on the show pretty soon. Incredible interviews in the upcoming shows, spending time with you, sharing with you events, and letting you understand that always we do this with the desire to do this. Protect the history, one warrior at a time, the Sport Karate Museum. As we always say, mahalo and aloha.